Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Do you have siblings? I don't even know.
No.
You're an only child?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is going to be a really hypothetical question.
Oh my gosh.
If you had siblings.
Okay.
And they could have superpowers.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Which power would you choose? What would you want them to have? Because Anna was really happy about Elsa being able to make things cold and snowy.
So much fun.
I don't think I would have cared.
Oh gosh. Well, I wouldn't want them to read my mind.
Oh, no.
No. Maybe flying. Oh, maybe teleportation if they're like,
ooh,
touch you. You know what I mean?
That would be,
because then
one.
We could be like, oh, quick, let's like go to Rome and get that pasta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get a gelato.
Yeah.
That's a great one. I think when I thought about it, mine was much more practical. It was, I wish my little sisters would have had the power to retain the choreography I would teach them in the basement. Honestly,
I feel like there's a lot going on right here. There's some heated moments happening.
Welcome, everybody, to a musical theater podcast where we discuss the emotional and cultural impact of some of our favorite musicals in theater history. My name is Jeffrey Scott Parsons. You can call me Jeff. Today, we're talking Frozen, which... maybe you're thinking, why?
Why?
Why are you talking about Frozen, Jeff? You tried to get me to like Cats, which, for the record, I didn't say I loved the Cats film. I just said it wasn't the abomination that everyone said it was. Cats came out and everyone thought, the end of film has come. And I'm like, calm down. You're okay.
Yeah, I did see it, but I don't want to talk about Cats.
No, we're not here to talk about Cats.
We're
here to talk about Frozen. Oh, so my point being... if you like Frozen, listen to this episode. You'll probably really enjoy it. If you don't like Frozen, listen to this episode.
Oh my gosh.
Because it's going to be a great conversation. And I'm really grateful you're here. Everyone.
Thank you.
Bruce Merkel.
Hi.
In the booth with me.
Yes. Hello, everyone.
Bruce, you have a long and sordid history with this show.
Oh my gosh, yes.
How long? Okay, we've both worked at Disney.
Yes.
You're still working at Disney.
Correct.
And you are working in Frozen.
Correct.
How long have you been with the show?
My first audition was 5 years ago in 2 months, so March 2015.
Oh, wow.
So it was a really long time ago. It's half a decade of
Frozen. Was that the opening cast?
That was the first reading that we did
at
Imagineering.
Shoot.
We did just a music stand reading.
Oh, wow.
There were just like 10 of us, and they were just seeing how the script worked and how it translated from the movie and what it would be like on stage and stuff like that.
Which is fascinating because from what I understand, Disney was creating three different versions of this show in terms of theatrical presentations. You had the one that was going on the cruise ship. You had the one that was going to be in the park at Disney California Adventure. And then the Broadway incarnation as well.
Yes.
And they're all different. It doesn't even seem like anybody was really on the same page in terms of creating a cohesive theatrical product.
Like the brand of the show, what it looks like on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I guess so. I mean, they all had different creative people.
Exactly. I guess that's my point.
So they could all interpret it how they wanted to. But, you know, you have to tell the story of Frozen.
Then how long was it before it went into rehearsals?
There was two other mini workshops. There was like a movement workshop where I went in and did some like in summer stuff. And they wanted to see what that choreography looked like. And then
for Olaf the Snowman.
Yeah, for Olaf the Snowman. And then we started rehearsals for the proper version in November. We did. That's the workshop is what people refer to it now. November 2015.
It's not a workshop.
It was like the workshop.
Got it.
Like at work. We're like, oh my God, remember the workshop? And then, so that was November 2015. And then we started for real, I think, in March 2016.
Okay.
With everybody, like in the same space.
Fast forward to you open the show at California Adventure at the Hyperion.
Yes.
I was working there at the time, so I came and saw it.
Yeah.
I remember it was about 70 minutes at that point.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And I thought it was too long.
Yes.
I mean, beautiful. It was... I'm so sorry. I started like
I saw your show. Oh
and
my
it was
gosh,
too long.
It was too long.
that's not what I wanted to say. It was. It was beautiful to look at. You all were sounded glorious.
Squeaky clean.
It was, yeah.
Very lit, beautifully, costumes, blah, blah, blah.
For yeah. sure. Also too long at 70 minutes. But then also, it was kind of a red flag to me in terms of turning this into a full-fledged Broadway musical where I'm thinking, if I'm sitting here and it feels too long at 70 minutes,
uh-huh.
how on earth is it going to be a two-act Broadway musical?
Yeah.
Because this was before, you know, it opened on Broadway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know, it's interesting because it's a quick story.
It is.
Like, you only have a couple beats that you need to get across, mm-hmm. and then they fill it in with a lot of other things.
Right.
So, you know, it's a padded kind of show, but the crux of it is the sister's relationship.
So the animated film Frozen came out in 2013 and quickly became one of the highest grossing
animated
films of
film.
The
yeah.
of that year, but oh, also yes. the highest grossing animated film of all time, surpassing Toy Story 3, Lion King, everybody. Frozen was number one up until this past year when the remake of Lion King took it over, which is strange that that Lion King is considered an animated film because it wasn't built that way.
Yeah. Yes.
It was
I didn't see it, but it looked.
It's like it's a Nat Geo
yes,
documentary yes, that just happens to be animated.
But then Frozen 2 didn't gross even more than that. I think Frozen 2 is now the highest grossing.
Really? Did Frozen 2 take over?
Yes. That's what I heard on these little, their little talk show rounds they're doing.
Oh,
the cast.
That's I cool. Crazy. I liked Frozen 2.
It was fun.
Okay. I'm sitting in Frozen 2. Taking it in and
yeah.
thinking, wait, did I sit through Frozen just to get to Frozen 2?
Oh.
Because I was really into the origin story.
Yes. We like information.
The world building of where on earth Arendelle sits and what its relationship is to magic in general.
Yes.
The, you know, the family, all of it. I was in.
I loved learning about the parents. I think that was
yeah.
really important. And I was excited that they went back to that because usually they always move forward with those sequels. They're
sure.
just like, okay, what else happens next? Next, 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 next.
Not to mention Evan Rachel Wood singing, giving me all the Across the Universe feels.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
So the movie comes out in 2013. It's a huge smash. It is directed and written by Jennifer Lee with help from other people. But she becomes the first female director of a film that grosses over $1 billion. Huge.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's amazing.
She also becomes the first female creative director at Walt Disney Animation Studios.
Wow.
I may be getting the title wrong.
You're not even looking at notes. I'm very impressed right now.
Well, thank you. She's a big deal.
Yeah.
Robert Lopez, who at this point is kind of musical theater royalty. He's written Avenue Q. He's written, had you written The Book of Mormon already?
Perhaps. I mean, Josh Gad was in that too.
Had they
connected so, by then?
Yeah. So then, and then his wife joins him as lyricist, Kristen Anderson Lopez, who is, she is kind of a loose cannon in terms of a lyricist. She takes big swings and I admire her for this reason.
Yeah.
Because who in their right mind would think that one of the biggest songs in all of film history would include the phrase frozen fractals? Right?
Show of hands, please. Ladies and gentlemen. Anyone?
I don't see any hands.
See any hands.
But she did it and everyone totally accepted it. Of course, this is a lyric that belongs in a song, frozen fractals.
Yeah.
Like, incredible.
Did you watch I was like watching YouTube videos, like making a Frozen to be like, fill my brain with things.
Uh-huh.
The video about Let It Go, writing Let It Go.
No.
And
what did they say?
At the moment, Let It Go was written that Elsa was the villain and they wrote this song and she really wanted to have like an empathic take on what that experience would be like for her. And it kind of changed it around and they had Jennifer Lee listen to the song and she said, oh, darn, we have to rewrite this character completely.
Wow. Like now she can't be a villain.
Yeah.
They were going in kind of a Wicked direction.
Absolutely.
Where she...
Absolutely. And some of the old concept art for the movie is really interesting. She looks very traditional Disney villain, you know, like all the costume
just, like,
things
snatched,
happening. Oh, super snatched.
The eyebrows.
Eyebrows. If there was a sharper line on an eyebrow, we've never met it. this character was a lot.
Yeah.
But they softened her, and I don't know if they were sisters to begin with, but they made them, you know, equals and sisters, and it was lovely.
And what was your first reaction to the film back in 2013?
Back in 2013, it was December. I was home for Christmas in Florida with my mom. We went to see Frozen.
Yes, you
this
did.
This new Disney movie. I enjoyed it. I had a good time. I did. I think I had a couple LOLs with Olaf. I think
sure.
Josh Gad made me laugh like maybe twice, maybe three times. I don't remember. But I took when I went away from it, I was like, oh, my gosh, that's so funny. It was just irreverent. And they had, you know, Anna waking up with Bedhead and talking about being gassy and wanting chocolate and, you know, and suppressing her emotions. And they made her super real. And I thought that stood out. It was different.
My two takeaways were I love this sister relationship.
Yes.
Never seen that.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of female empowerment where somebody didn't need to have a prince rescue them.
Yes.
Their love was the magic love.
Yeah, the guy took the back seat.
Yeah, it was amazing.
We don't need no man.
And kind of laid the groundwork for Moana, which I love even more. And then I also kind of felt that I had never felt like the songs were more important in a Disney film than when I saw Frozen.
Mm. And they did move the story along too.
They did. And they were so delightful to listen to over and over again. I have 14 nieces and nephews.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, huge family. All of them were listening to Frozen in the car.
Yes.
You know, incessantly. There was something about the music that just kept people humming along and also kind of imagining the story and characters
yeah.
and connecting to them. I don't know what it was that the Lopez's were able to tap into, but man, they hit a really solid zeitgeist moment with this film.
It was amazing. It's something that like Tangled and The Princess and the Frog didn't do, which came out, I think, before. And
mm-hmm.
I was confused, too. I was like, wow, this movie is
it
such
hit
a thing.
Hard.
Oh, yeah. It really did.
I also remember watching Let It Go in the theater and totally tearing up. I thought it was epic and beautiful. And when she first creates that ice bridge and runs over it, I thought this is Disney animation. This is Belle waltzing with Beast in the ballroom.
Yeah,
you know,
we're back.
Like, this is iconic.
Yes.
I'm watching an iconic moment.
Yes,
right now.
Yes. No, it was so
Look,
great.
I'm getting chills.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Wow.
I'm a Disney nerd.
You really are.
Yeah, I've loved Disney since forever.
Same. I mean, I grew up in Florida. I'm going to mention that eight more times.
Yeah.
So I went to Disney World a couple times a year growing up as a kid.
Oh.
My mom would get like free tickets. So I grew up going there and, oh wait, my cup is The Great Movie Ride.
Did you my gosh, that's a deep cut.
Unless, did you ever go on The Great Movie Ride?
Of course I went on The Great Movie Ride.
Do
you love it?
Oh, well, it's closed and I can't talk about that. It's too emotional.
When did it close?
Oh, Jeffrey, this is terrible. It closed a couple of years ago.
Because I was there a couple of years. Well, I don't know how many years it was now.
I know.
But it was there when I was there.
I know, it's close now. But they're building something that I'm sure it will be great.
I'm sure it'll be awesome. But see, from what I understand, you talk a lot about old films.
Like, yes.
You love the old movie musicals.
Oh my gosh.
Wizard of Oz.
Great.
And was that kind of your into the art form, the musical theater art form?
Totally. I remember being like two and watching the Mary Martin Peter Pan. Loved that. And then that, of course, segued into The Wizard of Oz. When I was two, I got the movie and like just started watching it over and over again and have
mm-hmm.
never stopped. And then that segued into, you know, what else did Judy Garland do? And Meet Me in St. Louis and then Katharine Hepburn films. And
is the next step.
That was where I went next. You
Meet Me in St. Louis
to
and
Catherine
then Summertime.
Hepburn. Do not mention Summertime. Did you just mention Summertime?
Of course. I'm
a
cinephile.
Oh my gosh, that David Lean movie. It's so beautiful.
It is actually really beautiful.
And kind of sad, but like we're not talking about Summertime, but I love Summertime. Sorry. We could go on and on.
I understand.
Anyway, yes, old films. I think The Wizard of Oz, Singing in the Rain. Those are a lot of people's first introduction into musical theater.
Every time I go visit a school and I ask the students, have you seen a musical before? And a lot of them don't think they have. And I say, well, have you seen Frozen? And inevitably, everyone's hand goes up in the air. I'm like, okay, well, surprise, you've seen a musical.
Yes.
You know, they don't realize that they have experienced the art form through animated films.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see what the generations of musical theater lovers look like in 20 years when my nieces and nephews who grew up listening to Frozen in the car nonstop are old enough to start buying tickets to go see the theater.
Yeah.
You know, because I know that films were so important to you, to me, in terms of us finding musical theater, what's it going to be like for them?
Absolutely. And also segueing into going into a real theater and sitting down with a waxy playbill in your hand and mm-hmm. watching something. I think if it is Frozen, people know what it is and they're like, oh, okay, I know that. I can sit through Frozen.
Right. Which brings me to one of the main reasons I wanted to do an episode about Frozen, because I think it's a great vehicle for a very important conversation about modern musical theater, which is the commercialization of Broadway. And not just Broadway, but media in general. We have huge media conglomerates like Disney with their universes like Marvel and animated franchises. Like we just said, Frozen now has 2 films. Toy Story has 4. The way that media conglomerates think in terms of longevity and profit is now these big intellectual properties. And with Frozen, I think that that's a great example of creating a Broadway show from an animated film that doesn't really scream out to me to become a stage production.
Yeah.
Most of the action in the story, like we said, happens very quickly and is very action driven.
Yes.
You've got avalanches. You've got big snow monsters.
Oh, yeah. The big marshmallow guy.
You got the marshmallow
guy.
Which
didn't make it into any of the stage versions.
Shocker.
Because, yeah, he doesn't really help the story along.
Exactly. But then you've got incredibly talented individuals like Robert Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez that obviously know the art form so well that you're like, oh, well, you're talented, so here's your reward. You get to turn this juggernaut into a theatrical piece.
Yeah.
And then I think it's kind of up to them to be like, well, crap, how are we going to do it?
Yes, with not just having something, an idea and creating something, but...
Yeah, having to create a musical based on an intellectual property that is already guaranteed to make money.
And that already has most of its like storytelling nuts and bolts in place. And you just have to kind of copy-paste it onto stage.
Not just copy-paste it, but actually figure out how to give it some artistic integrity.
For sure. Yeah.
And I think that talented people do that with Beetlejuice and Mean Girls and, you know, all of these shows. And I'm certainly not the type of person who believes that we shouldn't be turning movies into musical
experiences. A good story is a good story.
Exactly. So I'm certainly not saying that. But I am saying from a place of making money, I think people see intellectual properties that can make money. And so then they hire creative people to save their butts and turn it into something that's worth watching.
Yeah, for sure.
I think to a certain extent, that's what's happened with Frozen.
Oh, yeah. They just kind of wanted to like keep going. Yes, and.
Yes.
Frozen 2, Frozen Broadway.
Because I went to the grocery store and Elsa's on bananas.
Yes, she is.
Like, oh. I bought bananas and the little Chiquita banana sticker is on there.
And she's like, she's doing a little look over the shoulder.
She's looking over the shoulder potassium. and she's got her fingers feathered.
Yeah, fingers feathered. She does. She's everywhere. And Olaf was everywhere, too. I remember when I auditioned
absolutely.
For this, I never really thought about doing that, but he was everywhere. And I was like, okay, well, I know the snowman. Everybody knows who the snowman mm-hmm. is because it just leaked into every CVS in America.
Mm-hmm.
Pencils, backpacks, lunch boxes, bananas.
Bananas. It's bananas.
It's bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
We'll be right back right after this commercial break.
That being said, I really do love these characters.
Yes.
Olaf is, like you said, an LOL moment in the film, in the stage production, and also just the sweetest, most lovable thing in the world.
Yeah, it's just very sweet. It's a different character. And I like in Frozen 2 how they had him kind of growing up and learning new things.
Yes.
His
so
new
sweet.
Song is so sweet.
Yeah. That new song is adorable.
Yeah, it's adorable.
Okay, confession.
Oh, gosh.
I'm having all of these opinions about the stage version of Frozen, the Broadway version of Frozen.
Okay, but,
and I haven't seen it.
Oh, whoa.
So everything that I will be talking about in terms of the Broadway version of Frozen will be based on my knowledge of the original cast album.
Yes.
The photography stills.
The B-roll. The commercials.
Exactly.
The behind-the-scenes videos on Broadway World.
Everything that I could possibly find in terms of pirating, but that's about it.
Yeah. I understand. Well, it's at the Pantages until...
Is it still there right now?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my gosh. But I don't think I have the money to go see it.
Enter the lottery online.
But then everybody gets the notification that I just entered the lottery. It's embarrassing.
What are you talking about?
Every time.
There is no lottery shame.
I feel like I always get social media messages from people who enter the lottery. So and so, like, is it, it's part of the thing you have to do, right?
No, no, you just enter your email. It's real discreet. It's on the DL.
That's it.
They don't out you at all. It's totally fine. That's how I saw it. Confession.
Yeah. You won the lottery. That's impressive. Maybe there's some gold star.
Just enter the lottery.
All right. Maybe I'll enter the lottery.
You only have a couple more weeks. Get on it.
Okay.
It's right here.
So did you see it at the Pantages?
I did. I saw it at Pantages.
Okay. Because you've seen this show.
I've seen it a lot.
A few times.
A few times.
You saw it in Denver at its original tryout.
With my friend Tori Britt, we went to see the Denver show. Okay. I was like, okay, Frozen. Huge part. Let's see Frozen.
Yeah.
Let's see what's going on.
So you saw it there, and we'll talk about that. And then did you see it in New York as well?
Yes.
And then you saw it in New York, and then you also saw it at the Pantages?
Yes.
I mean, it was the lottery, but
yes,
still.
I did. It was yes, I did.
Wow.
I feel very exposed
attacked.
Right now and attacked.
I feel very
oh
attacked.
My gosh. I
why so much? Did you like it enough to see it three times?
I did like, well, I had, you know, we have friends in all these shows.
Oh, fair enough.
So we go see friends. We support our friends in shows.
Now also, I feel attacked.
Oh, wait. Yes, we support our friends
in shows.
We
support our friends.
Ever do that? Ever think about doing that? No.
Sacrifice your $20 and like, possibly a little social media standing.
Yeah, and just 3 hours of your time. And parking, though. Honestly, parking so bad, like, I would forgive you if that were the reason.
If that was the reason
if
I didn't
you didn't
want to
be exposed, that's a different reason. Yeah, no, I saw it a lot. I, you know, went out for the tour.
Mm.
Actors, you know.
We do that.
We go out for things. And
so you wanted to see who got your role.
F. Michael Haney is amazing and everything's great. No, it was cool. I was, you know, wanted to see it and see what they did with the character, which is what would be different from what we did because like Liesl Tommy, who directed our version, and Michael Grandich, who did Broadway, had different takes on Olaf. And in the work sessions, I was like learning about that and what they were thinking. Like he's younger in our production than he is in the Broadway production.
Interesting.
He's like more of a toddler and he's more like of a precocious little kid in this version.
At least that's
how it was explained to me.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I want to talk about the creation of the stage version. We talked about the animated film. We talked about the creation of the version that you're in, the Hyperion. Robert Lopez and his wife, Kristen Lopez, they write a musical called Up Here. Did you ever hear about this?
No, I didn't.
It was a musical that played at La Jolla Playhouse near San Diego. And it has a lot of similarities to Inside Out, the Pixar film.
Oh, okay. Oh, wait. I think I knew someone in this or something. I've heard about it when it was happening.
Yeah. It's the story about a kind of a schlubby guy who has all of these voices in his head, but not in an unhealthy way. It's just like his different emotions and personalities all actually have voices and characters.
Yeah.
And so it's the story about him like falling in love with a girl, but then all of his insecurities and voices are constantly commenting on him and his life and him, you know, coming to some sort of conclusion with that. It's really weird and incredibly problematic. But of course had a lot of great music because they're incredibly talented songwriters, composers. Alex Timbers was the director. Alex Timbers, who also directed, you know, Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson and Peter and the Starcatcher. He's a really talented guy. He was the director. Joshua Burgas, who had just won a Tony Award for On the Town, was the choreographer. And the female lead was Betsy Wolf. Now, all of these people were slated to be attached to Frozen. Alex Timbers was going to be the director. Joshua Burgas was going to be the choreographer. Betsy Wolf was going to be Elsa. And then the Lopezes, obviously, were writing the new material to supplement with what they had already done for the film. And that it was going to premiere at the Denver Center in Colorado. I don't know what happens, but suddenly, before it opens, everything changes. They get a new director, a new choreographer, and a new lead. And I think they actually went through a couple of choreographers. Who they end up opening the show with is Michael Grandage, who is a British director. He was the artistic director of the Donmar Warehouse, very much a classical theater person. It had directed Jude Law in a production of Hamlet. His first venture into musical theater was the Broadway revival of Evita that he directed with Ricky Martin.
Oh, wow.
Remember that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his choreographer for that was Rob Ashford. And so he and Rob Ashford team up again on this production of Frozen. And then they get a new Elsa in Casey Levy. And then it opens in Denver. Now, what was it like in Denver?
Because
you saw it.
Yeah, Denver Frozen, it was interesting because all I had to go off of was the movie and our version, and it felt darker to me. Mm. They spent a lot more time with the little girls in the beginning, which I did like because, oh my gosh, they were amazing.
Really?
Yes, the young Anna like stole the show. I wish I had her name to give you now, but it was so exciting and captivating, and you really got to know these characters a lot better when they were younger before we got the older versions. So I think it grounded it a lot, and it was really it just made the adult scenes like more satisfying because you had more of a history with them.
Mm-hmm. But so, then at the same time, that means you have to go longer without meeting the actual leads of the show.
This is true. I mean, it felt like 20, 25 minutes before we got the girls.
Yeah. That's a long time.
Yes. And Grandpabby had a bigger part in that version too. He was kind of like a narrator in the beginning. He was the first character you saw.
This is the little troll guy.
This is little troll guy, but was, you know, all ripped and had a tail and dreads, and we loved it.
Don't even get me started.
No, I want to get you started. Tell me about it.
Why? Okay. Well, it's interesting because Michael Grandage said, he very plainly told the media that he was interested in making Disney the next Shakespeare, using these stories to create classical storytelling.
Yes.
I'm sure in the same way that Julie Taymor approached The Lion King.
Sure.
Because at this point, The Lion King is the most profitable theatrical property of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is insane. And the last Disney on Broadway experience before Frozen was The Little Mermaid, which for all intents and purposes was considered kind of an artistic bomb.
Oh, it was.
Yeah. Did you see that one?
I did see that one.
With the Heelys?
With the Heelys. Yes. Yeah. I remember that time in New York, people were saying that like everyone was learning how to get on Heelys.
So that they could get into The Little Mermaid?
Yes.
A job's a job.
A job's a job. And like crashing in the subway. Can you imagine? That's great. It's like day two of your Heelys and you're going to your callback. Wow.
And then you just fall onto the tracks.
What I did for love.
So I think after Little Mermaid, they're kind of wanting to get back to this Lion King territory. And so by, you know, getting someone serious like Michael Grandage involved, I think that was their first step. And the approach that he took to the animated film was to make it a little darker, a little more adult, knowing full well that kids would still come and enjoy it. But the design and the story and just kind of tone of the show is much more adult than most of the Disney theatrical ventures.
Yes. Yes, it definitely is. I mean, a common theme in Disney stories is having the children be abandoned or, you know, have their parents
disappear
or die or something terrible happens. Mm-hmm. They leave them alone. I remember Liesl Tommy was always talking about how that was such a powerful device because it takes a kid's worst fear and makes it real. Mm-hmm. So the stakes are instantly super high.
Mm-hmm. I think the fairy tales in general work as wish fulfillment.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that kids wish that their parents would die, but they often imagine, I mean, that's why it's such a fear is, you know, the possibility of what this could be like.
It's all you have.
So to see it played out for you in a story is actually kind of cathartic.
Yeah.
Because then you don't really have to go through it yourself. You can kind of vicariously experience these stories through
them.
And then they're okay at the end.
They're okay at the end.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And then you saw it in New York. And what were the biggest changes?
I think the Pabi character changing so much. He was not necessarily.
He was no longer a narrator.
Not really. Yeah. He took a kind of a back seat. And it was more of that the chorus was speaking as one,
mm-hmm.
you know, more akin to
very Shakespearean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, and it presented it as like the telling of a story.
Mm-hmm.
So it
a troop,
yeah. Back to the basics, and you know nobody was like stepping out of the chorus and becoming a principal, but it was super supported by the ensemble, and there's lots of like beautiful, luscious music that they sing that helps move the story forward.
It opens on Broadway in 2018, and it's still running.
Yeah,
you know, it's getting people in the seats like they wanted.
Yeah.
What's interesting about theater that people might not realize is that films, like the film version of Frozen, had a budget of $150 million because animation is incredibly expensive.
Mm.
But the budget for Frozen on Broadway is $30 million. Nickels compared to $150 million, yeah. right? And yet, it's so much harder to earn back your budget on Broadway than it ever would be with an animated film. Because you can only see it in one place.
Yes.
Right? Just the logistics of theater are much more difficult. When you release a film in wide release, you have the opportunity of people going to see it in California or in Florida or anywhere else in the country or world for that matter. Whereas when you open a show on Broadway, you have one theater. And even if you sell out, you can only sell so many tickets every night.
Yep.
And then you also have to do it every night. So you're even though you've, you know, paid everybody to write it and create it, you have to also pay people to show up and perform it.
Yes.
Not only are you making money from those tickets, but then you're also using some of that money to cover running costs. So it just takes a lot longer to make your money back. But that's one of the reasons why producing theater is such a risky enterprise.
Oh, yeah, it takes a long time.
It opens, though, and is a big hit. It gets nominated for Best Musical that year at the Tony Awards, which is not a bad thing whatsoever. Here are the other nominees for Best Musical in 2018. The Band's Visit, which wins.
Okay.
Mean Girls and SpongeBob SquarePants. A lot of cartoons.
Yeah.
In that list. Also in that season were Once on This Island, Carousel, and My Fair Lady. It also gets nominated for Best Book of a Musical for Jennifer Lee, which I think is interesting because a screenwriter isn't usually invited to the party when it goes to Broadway.
Ah, yeah.
Which is cool. So yeah. She also wrote the book. She's nominated. Obviously, the Lopez's are nominated for music and lyrics. Excuse me, for music and lyrics. And that's it. No design nominations, no acting nominations. I don't know if that's the Tony Awards being like, man, we don't like Disney.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Because I thought at the very least that the lighting of that show is pretty spectacular.
It was pretty beautiful. And how they used like the frozen stuff and how things were freezing and just a lot of cues at least.
Best cues.
Best cues. Most cues goes to Frozen.
So let's talk about the story, shall we? Can we go through the show?
Let's go through the show.
The stage version opens without Frozen Heart, which is from the movie. It instead, like you said, begins with this Shakespearean chorus introducing us to Arendelle.
And once there was a family.
And it's all about, like, they say family so many times.
Yes.
I actually kind of like this idea that this royal family is the pride of Arendelle.
Yes.
Yeah? And then that family's destroyed.
Oh, just obliterated.
No. But then we do spend a little bit of time with little Anna and little Elsa.
Yes.
We see how much Anna loves Elsa's secret superpower, which is to freeze things.
Yeah.
To create a winter wonderland. And so they're playing, they want to build a snowman.
And they do. Out of toys.
So
it's
fun.
It's very cute.
Out of toys?
Yeah, like put these like toys together and then he animates on his own.
Oh my gosh, how cool.
Yeah, you should see the
I don't think I've
show.
Seen that one. I should really see the show. And then, boom, the powers get a little out of control and accidentally hits little Anna.
Oh.
Right?
Yes.
So in order to medically help her.
the first aid.
They call the doctor. In. Oh, wait, they don't call a doctor. They call a shirtless centaur.
They do. Well, who would you want to help you if you were suddenly strucketh?
I don't know why they made Grandpappy
so
into this like hot dude.
Yeah, yeah.
That does CrossFit.
Yeah, he does.
Someone explain to me why
he. I mean, it's he's a strong presence. He's. I don't know the answer. I don't know.
It just seems strange. Know. And just superficial.
If we have a side-by-side of the film Grandpappy and the stage Grandpappy, I think many questions will arise.
Many questions. Well, they decided that they're not these little rock trolls.
They are not trolls. And the word trolls is not used. They are hidden folk.
Oh. Are trolls like an offensive? Am I using an offensive term?
Actual trolls are quite offended by that. No. In the movie, And in our version, they're trolls.
Oh, really? Okay.
Super trolls.
Yes. These are like mysterious people of the mountain.
They've rebranded them, yes, for the Broadway version.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is great because then they don't have to be on their knees like you guys.
Oh,
running
gosh.
Around the stage and, you know, tearing their cartilage.
Those poor cast members.
I know. So you've got Hot Grandpappy.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And he tells, sorry.
Are you in a place? You need a moment?
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
So then he comes out and makes her better.
Yes. He's like heals
yeah.
her. They have healing powers.
Which is awesome. And then he basically gives them a warning.
Yes. He warns them, but he removes the memory of the powers from Anna.
Oh.
So she doesn't remember her sister has these powers to begin with.
Mm, that's
and
right.
So then to Elsa, it's, hey, conceal, don't feel.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do the thing. Just suppress, 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 suppress.
Which I think I've heard people criticize the parents, right? Saying, why would they do that?
The parents are not planning on dying and leaving these girls with this message in their head. So Elsa, from her parents, the only cues she has from her parents is to not feel them and don't let it happen and just keep it under wraps. Whereas if she had had an adolescence with them, perhaps
yeah.
that would have evolved and she might have learned to use them and learn what they were and had more information.
That's so true. As we get older, we learn things very elementary.
Yes.
This is hot. Don't touch it.
Yes.
But then you get older and you're like, oh, I need to boil water.
Yes.
There's a right way of doing it.
Yeah, I'm going to touch this end and not that end.
Yeah.
And that would have, I think, happened over time.
Absolutely.
I think the character would have been fine. But that option was not given because there you go. No parents.
Because the parents go away on a trip. They go to see the girl from Tangled get
yes.
married.
Yes. Yes, they do.
That's the fan fiction.
Are you in on the whole fan fiction?
Yeah.
Wait, isn't Rapunzel in Arendelle? Can't you see her for a moment
mm-hmm.
in Arendelle? Okay.
During the coronation,
yeah.
you can technically see Rapunzel.
She's like outside hanging out.
I think it's probably just an Easter egg for
yeah.
everybody. But Disney fans have taken that to mean that the parents were going to see her get married.
Oh.
And then that's when the ship sunk and they died. So then when it's time for Elsa's coronation, Rapunzel comes to like pay her respects because the parents
wow.
did die on wow. the way to go to her wedding.
There's some guilt there.
Yeah.
Wow. What a tangled tangent.
So the parents unfortunately pass away.
Yeah.
And actually the way that they do it in the stage version is really beautiful and
yeah.
touching.
Ours originally was so beautiful. It's been changed since then.
Really?
But Liesl had them go down in trapdoors on either side of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
There's rain and there's lightning and thunder happening. Two tombstones rise in place of where they had just gone in the trapdoors. And Anna wore this like pleather coat, which was iconic, and in her mourning moment. And they've cut all those things since. But she really. Oh, and there were mourners in the audience with black cloaks and candles.
Oh, wow.
They sold that moment.
So they pass away. Anna feels incredibly alone because at this point, Elsa has retreated.
Yeah.
Trying to understand her powers and how to control them. And the fact remains that the more angst and turmoil she feels, the harder it is to control those. So she's kind of in this cyclical churning
yeah.
of, I feel horrible. I can't control my powers. I can't control my powers, so I feel horrible.
Yes.
Meanwhile, that leaves Anna all by herself. And Anna is a character that thrives on
interacting with people.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
a people girl.
Yeah, she is.
She loves
interaction.
Oh, she's outgoing.
She's a really interesting, complex character. And also one that I feel is kind of thankless in that so much rides on her. A lot of the comedy, a lot of the action, the romance, and the heart all fall on her shoulders.
Yeah.
And when it works, you kind of don't notice it.
Mm. Yes, that's so true. Yeah, she is the hardest working person in the show, in
yeah.
any version of the show.
And Elsa, meanwhile, is kind of all by herself. And while singing Let It Go and singing some of these other songs is incredibly difficult, it's probably the less demanding of the two roles, but is ultimately the more showy and interesting because there is so much angst and inner turmoil that
yeah.
the audience is connecting to.
And like a transformation, and she
yeah.
makes such a leaps and bounds, lots of arc with that character.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to Anna, but of course she learns stuff too. But
yeah, mm-hmm. but she's the vehicle for everything.
Yeah.
without really getting as big of a payoff.
Yeah.
And Kristen Bell did such a wonderful job of voicing the character in the film. I think a lot of girls have big shoes to fill.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. She's just so funny and so real, and and there's no pretense with her.
Yeah.
And super accessible. Mm-hmm. Like everyone wants to be her friend.
Right.
And she's kind of a mess, and we're like, oh, I'm a mess too. I get it.
So then the coronation comes. It comes time for Elsa to actually become queen.
Yes.
Which means that now, for the first time in forever, the gates are being opened, and Anna gets to, you know, interact with people. She's going to finally see her sister.
Why have a ballroom with no balls?
Thank you. She wants to stuff chocolate in her face.
Yes. She has all these feelings. She wants to meet a gentleman.
Yeah. She actually is a really great character.
She's great.
I love Anna. The coronation involves Elsa needing to hold a scepter and
an orb.
Mm. And the tool that she's always had with being able to control the powers is putting on gloves.
Just thin fabric.
Yeah. Just this, the thinnest of fabric.
Everything's fine.
Everything's fine. But she can't do that when she holds the scepter and the orb. So she needs to practice conceal, don't feel, so that when she takes off those gloves, all winter doesn't break loose.
All winter, yes. And so everyone's looking at her. That's a lot of pressure.
Right. In the stage version, this is where my favorite new song comes into play.
Dangerous to Dream.
Dangerous to Dream.
Same.
Is a freaking gorgeous song.
It's so good.
It is.
I can't be what you expect of me.
I'm
trying every day.
The lyric is so great when she says, you can change the rules, but not the reason they were made.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
It's so beautiful.
It is. It brings such an effective texture to the character, who Elsa has kind of become a character that just belts nonstop.
Yes.
And this is a much softer, much more introspective look at who this person is.
And you know that she wants that relationship. She is not as cold as she appears from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't maybe get that as clearly, I think, in the animated movie. She's just like, oh, there's Elsa, there's Anna. Like, we don't really know to the extent to which she really wants this to work out.
Right.
So we get to see inside of her. It's really, it's lovely.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's, she's sensitive and soft, and we're like, okay, we get you.
I love it. It works. She becomes queen.
Yes. Meanwhile, Anna is off meeting people, meets Prince Hans of the Southern Isles.
And Prince Hans is the youngest of how many?
Oh my gosh. 13th in line. 13th.
Oh.
Maybe. Perhaps. Should we look this up? Is this important enough to look
I don't know if it's important enough, but I'm kind of interested to know now if you can guess.
I've only heard it like 1,000 times while I was on stage, so don't worry about
so don't worry. Knowing it. I'm incredibly present.
I'm only waiting for my cue line.
6, 7, 8. He's the youngest of this long line of brothers who are all princes, so there's no way that he's ever going to inherit the kingdom of his father because all of the brothers would have to die first.
Yes.
That's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. Not likely.
So he seems in many ways like a good match for Anna because he feels a little left out.
Yeah.
He feels disconnected from his family, from his purpose, and they connect very quickly. And
there they go. They fall into a fun little romantic moment.
Yes.
Love is an open door.
He, at the end of the song, which is, you know, a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Proposes.
That's fine.
And like a crazy person, she accepts.
She has never known any kind of feeling like this. So she said, I want more of this.
Let's do it.
Yes, please. A life of this. Oh, my God. I'll have a life of a dance break with you.
Which I actually really love because it seems like such an episode of The Bachelor to me.
Because how? I've never seen The Bachelor.
Neither have I. But... But it feels like on reality shows, they the whole premise. Do I need to explain what the premise of The Bachelor is?
I know that there are roses and there are people and there one person has many options of a suitor.
Yeah.
And so they.
So there's this dude.
Yeah.
Right. Who has been chosen by a casting agency.
Oh my God.
To star in a television show.
Yes.
And then there are.
Or she's beautiful.
Yeah. And then all of these women are like, I want to be on this show in order to marry this guy.
Of course.
And then throughout the season, he dates them all and picks one.
Yeah.
And they're like, absolutely, this is the person I meant to be with.
Yes.
That sounds to me a lot like love is an open door. Do you want to hear something crazy? Do you want to marry me? Do you want to hear something even crazier?
Yes. Sandwiches. That's what I was going to say.
I think it's actually incredibly relevant.
Yes.
To some of the bizarre ideas that we have about love and romance and marriage.
Yeah. They had like a quick little swipe right romance.
Yeah. They had one season on The Bachelor, and now they're thinking they're going to live all happily ever after.
All in.
Yeah. So she tells Elsa this.
Yeah.
That she has met the love of her life.
Great news.
And Elsa's like, you're nuts.
Excuse me? How long have you known him?
Yeah. And she's like, it doesn't matter. You don't understand this. We're in love,
we're
Elsa.
We're in love. Daddy, I love you.
We never talk about that, by the way. We never talk about the fact that Ariel has never met Prince Eric.
Has she not met him at this point?
By the time she says, Daddy, I love him.
She just spied on him in the boat, watching him with the dog.
When she saved him.
Yeah. And then creepy. The first time she meets him, he's unconscious.
Me too.
Same. Him too. Him too.
Him too.
Aw.
Anyway. So Elsa isn't having this, and she doesn't, and for a good reason, doesn't think that Anna's making a sound decision. Anna couldn't disagree more,
mm-hmm.
and that sets off Elsa's powers.
Yes, one of the gloves comes off,
mm-hmm.
and Elsa is having some feelings, and everyone's watching, and boom,
and
powers happen.
Everybody gets to see the feelings in the incarnation of ice and snow. So now, all of a sudden, oh my gosh, our new queen is a monster.
Yeah. A little
foreshadowing.
Thank you.
And she's humiliated. This is the worst possible thing. This is what she, you know, had been fearing since she was a child. She runs out.
Yeah.
There are other guests there, including the Duke of Weaseltown
is what they say, but it's corrected to Weaselton by the Duke himself. Yes. And he is like, uh-oh, she is a problem.
And he's kind of painted to be the villain of this piece. We think that he is the one who's wanting to destroy our heroine.
Yes.
And at this point, he is kind of wondering, you know, with everyone else, if this is such a good idea to have her as a queen.
Yeah.
Elsa runs away. Then what happens?
Elsa runs away, and Anna says, I have to go after her. And she goes after her up the North Mountain, because that's where Elsa was last seen headed towards. So Anna's going on this journey. It's all snowy. There's some things happening. And she meets Kristoff.
Now, Kristoff is an interesting fella. He is an ice delivery man.
Yeah, ice harvester.
Ice harvester.
Yeah. Delivers the ice in a little wagon with his
reindeer,
Sven.
Named Sven. Now, in the stage version, Sven is played by Andrew. I don't know if it's still played by Andrew Perosi.
I think he's still in it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But by a dancer. And can you describe this costume?
It is full coverage, so you don't see any human at all. So he is kind of walking on his toes, the back legs of the reindeer. His toes are almost like pointed towards the ground, and his arms are controlling the front of the reindeer, and you don't see his face.
It's an incredible puppet.
It's quite beautiful. Not as expressive or animated as the movie. So, you know, that side by side would be different. But yeah, he is, for practical purposes, a reindeer void of facial expression.
Yeah. And Kristoff, his only friend in the world is Sven. He's his ride or die.
He's a mountain man.
And since Sven doesn't talk, Kristoff talks for him.
Yeah.
This is a source of comedy that I have never laughed at once in all of the versions of Frozen that I've seen.
I feel attacked.
Oh, wow. So how do you feel about it?
Honestly, the funniest thing in the movie. No, it's this is something I've never laughed at. What do you think about it? I don't think it's meant to be something life-changing, but it's interesting.
It's supposed to be funny, though.
Here's the thing. Disney movies, like, and stories in general, like, talking animals, we're there, ready to go. What do you got to say? Let's go. But this didn't happen with Sven. They didn't give him a voice. Although a snowman is okay to talk, but not Sven.
Good point.
So I don't know what the choice of the device was for that. I think maybe to show Kristoff's isolation.
Yeah.
To show that he just has to kind of, you know, make it on his own. He's a loner. He has his reindeer. And so he's just going to be okay. He doesn't really need other people. He can fill in the blanks for them.
And I think that the frozen world is full of quirky people.
Yes.
Yeah, right? Totally. Everybody has a little bit of a quirk.
Yeah, everyone's kind of weird.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. But they double down hard on it, even in Frozen 2. I was like, when the first Kristoff talking for Sven joke happened in Frozen 2, I'm like, oh, no, we're still doing this.
We're going to do this again. Okay, years later. Got it. No voice for you.
So he sings, reindeer are better than people.
Yeah, reindeers are better than people. Sven, don't you think I'm right? And then Sven talks
as well. Meanwhile, back in Arendelle. Oh, okay. So, no, actually, we should say, so he meets Anna.
Anna happens upon Kristoff, and they have a little exchange, and she's like, hey, I got to go up this mountain. Can you help me? And he's like, and I'll take people places. She goes, but I'm of the royal family. And he goes, okay, fine, get in, whatever.
Their little meet cute is destined to bloom more than just a friendship because they can't stand each other.
Of course. And what's going to happen there?
Yeah. It's still sweet.
And they sing the song, What Do You Know About Love? Which is super cute.
When I was talking about how do you change a cartoon with a lot of action into a stage musical, What Do You Know About Love is one of the big things that they do. It's now they're crossing like a bridge.
Yeah.
And singing while they do it.
Yeah.
And she saves his life. Then they learn something about each other on the way. And then ultimately see each other's bravery when push comes to shove.
Yeah. He was judging her for getting engaged for someone she just met.
Right. And she was judging him.
For being weird. I don't know. Why is she not like him?
It's like, what do you know about love? You're up here alone with a reindeer.
Yeah, speaking for him.
So you're telling me about human connection and relationships?
Ooh, dang.
Meanwhile, back in Arendelle, Hans has decided to send out a search party to rescue Anna because there's no way that she'd be okay on her own out there. She's a helpless little girl.
She is.
Also to bring back Elsa. Because she needs to stand trial or they need to figure out what's going on. Also because Arendelle's now in this like eternal winter.
Yeah, it was July.
So that's the other reason to bring Elsa back. Then Let It Go happens.
That's Elsa. Adult Elsa doesn't have a lot of bullet points in Act 1. But yeah, Act 1 ends with Let It Go.
Now, can you talk me through a little bit about how it's staged in the New York production?
Yeah, it's simple. There's kind of a bare stage thing happening. She comes out, sings the first part of the song. Cape flies away, glove flies away.
Magic.
So good.
That, I mean, people have to spontaneously break out into applause to see those things recreated live. Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's simple. It's theatrical. It's, you know, it's real. It's right in front of you. Yeah, and then she kind of like creates her ice palace. There's, you know, curtains come down, lights happen, many cues in this number. And then
go stage manager.
So yay. Yeah. And then this dress reveal is quite impressive.
Because everybody loves a transformation. Let's be honest, right?
Yeah.
And when she goes from her original garb.
Coronation garb
to the full.
The jewels and the glitter and the fabric.
Sparklies.
Sparkles, many sparkle things.
And it happens in such a cool theatrical way.
It's very cool.
I think it's everybody's favorite part of the entire show.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's unexpected. You're like, how's it going to happen? She's just standing on stage by herself. And then boom.
And then it happens.
Then it happens.
Theater magic, people.
Theater magic. Boom. Act one ends. Everyone's screaming, crying.
Which, let's talk about Casey Levy, because that voice is incredible.
It's so good.
She was a Fantine in the revival of Les Mis, right?
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Also a similar type of role where you have
one great song.
Yeah, you have a song by yourself and then you kind of disappear for
a
lot of the rest of the show.
Yeah.
Anyway, but an incredible singer.
Yeah.
How was she in the show?
Oh, flawless. Incredible. Yeah, just lovely and powerful. Great actor.
Ugh.
Just really, you know, was present.
Yeah.
And that's what I think Michael Grandage wanted was scene work,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
To ground this cartoon that everybody knows.
Absolutely. That's so exciting. We should also mention Patty Murin, who is also wonderful.
Just like kind of she's plucked out of like an old Hollywood movie.
Really?
I love it. I love her like sense of humor and her timing is it's really great. Oh, you can't really teach that.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
She was in Holiday Inn.
Was she?
Yeah. I don't know if it was the Holiday Inn in New York, but her name was in all of the costumes when I just did it.
You're like,
I was like, oh, hi, she was in the show.
In your costumes?
Yeah, my costumes.
Great.
Weird. She played Ted Hanover.
Oh my God, amazing.
Yeah.
First of all.
It was exciting. No, mine all said Corbin Bleu and my co-stars all said Patty Murin.
Oh, amazing.
Corbin doesn't smell. I can tell you that.
That's helpful to know.
He has good hygiene.
Great.
Those costumes didn't stink.
I haven't had to share my costumes in Frozen, thank goodness.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Back to Frozen.
So many tangents.
So Act Two begins with this song called Hygge.
Yeah.
Now, my people are from Denmark and the UK.
Okay.
I'm just white.
Yes.
As are you, I'm sure.
Yes.
Do you have, what is your ancestry?
German, Italian.
Oh, you are Italian?
Slovak. I'm a quarter Slovak.
Wow.
And then the other quarter is like English and some other things.
Oh, that's an interesting mutt that you got going on.
Yeah, yeah.
I am much blander. Yeah. I'm just the UK and Denmark. Maybe a little Switzerland.
This is just like a Wonder Bread podcast.
Yeah, this
really.
Episode.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of Wonder Bread, or lack of diversity for that matter, your production of Frozen at the Hyperion was known for having diverse casting. That was one of Liesl Tommy's big goals with that show, right?
It is so amazing that she did that. Liesl Tommy made sure that the casting for Frozen was super diverse and reflected the audience that was watching it because their race is not a part of the storytelling. So you can kind of do whatever you want with that.
It's amazing.
And it was so awesome.
And also, I think, influential to the Broadway version because Kristoff is African-American, right?
Yeah, I would say it influenced a lot of things. It was the first time a show in the park for Disney was made where the characters didn't necessarily look like the ones in the movie.
Because we have imaginations, we have creativity, and
the
ultimately...
story, yeah, it's not about race. So yeah. It's about the relationship and that you don't need that to tell the story.
Thank you. Always. But what I was talking about was that my people are from Denmark.
Yes.
So I have a book about Hygge.
Yes.
And in this book, it teaches about what this term means, which is comfy, cozy, anything to do with curling up in front of a fire and
nice fabrics and cottons and lampshades and
diffused lighting
and salt lamps and
candles. I have a lot of candles.
Of candles.
So it's something from my ancestry that I try to keep alive.
Yeah.
In this musical, it's a 25-minute musical number.
It needs a number. The purpose of it is so that they can get supplies to go up the North Mountain and say hi to Elsa. But they take their time.
Anna and Kristoff find themselves at a trading post run by this guy named Oaken.
Yeah,
is that right?
Wandering Oaken.
Wandering Oaken. These names are very specific.
You said quirky people in Arendelle. It's true.
It's true. There's a lot of quirks. They find this trading post that has, you know, lots of great tools for surviving the winter.
Yeah.
And also a hot sauna.
Yeah.
To, you know, thaw.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen this production number, but from what I understand, the hot sauna means that people are naked in the dance break.
Of course. Yes, it does. Why would they not be?
But I mean, not there's no nudity.
No, there's no nudity. No, they're all wearing like bodysuits and stuff. But yeah, they have their, what are they called? The leaves?
They have these...
Eucalyptus.
Okay.
Or something.
When you get a massage, you get like
beaten. Yeah, you get beaten with the leaves.
I
think this is like an Eastern European thing.
Okay.
So I think that it's
because I've never
something.
Experienced this.
Well,
but that being said, I live in Los Angeles, so I usually go and get a Korean massage.
Great.
They don't beat me with leaves.
Okay.
There.
We'll go to Eastern Europe and maybe that will happen for you. And you might also be inspired to write a musical number about it.
I'm not saying no.
Great.
I'll say yes and. Yes, I will.
Say yes.
And I will write a musical about it.
Great.
They have this musical number, which you said has been kind of...
They condensed it a little bit. And I know that the tour stuff would happen there. The edits and things are being implemented in New York now.
Which is cool. It happens.
Yeah. Shows evolve.
After Hygge, they head back up to find Elsa.
Yeah. They go up to the castle, the ice palace, and Anna finds Elsa up there. And they kind of have
a moment. Can we talk about how Elsa is an amazing architect?
Yeah, she is really underrated for this incredible skill that she has. She's created banisters and balconies and arches and chandeliers.
Chandeliers of ice.
Countertops.
Girl needs to open an Etsy store. Yeah. She needs to have a boutique on Melrose.
It'd be so great. Everything frozen. Oh my God, it'd be beautiful.
Yeah, people would go nuts.
Good for her. And the dress, which is, it's made of ice. What happened to her other dress? We don't know.
It doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter. It's now ice.
It got sucked into the ground.
Yes. So they have this conversation. Yeah.
Anna finds Elsa in this palace. And they start having this conversation. Now, this is actually one of my other favorite parts of the new music that has written. They've taken that little piece from the Demi Lovato pop version, which I love that in the movie, everybody in the world wanted to listen to Let It Go, but like Idina Menzel's version.
Yeah.
Not the pop version that was playing over the credits. I can't think of another Disney movie where that has happened.
Yeah,
like we would always listen to Vanessa Williams.
Absolutely.
Singing Colors of the Wind.
Oh, Colors of the Wind. Who's feeding the beast?
Celine Dion.
Oh my God.
And Peebo Bryson. Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, I wasn't listening to, I was listening to Angela Lansbury.
Okay.
But I don't think FM 100.
Maybe they weren't playing that one.
No.
Probably not.
Anyway, but they've taken that little piece that they put for Demi Lovato, the Frozen in this life I've chosen. They put it into the musical, and I think it's a great choice.
No, it's great.
They have this conversation in which Anna is telling Elsa, "Hey, girl, like come back to Arendelle. We love you. Also, you kind of set off winter, and you need to fix that." And Elsa's
like, "News to her. Oh gosh."
Elsa thought, "If I, you know, was isolated and all by myself up here, that I wasn't going to hurt anyone." But that's not true because Arendelle's frozen. I don't have any control of my powers, and so she's feeling angsty. And we all know that when she's feeling angsty, the powers get out of control again. So by the end of this little exchange between Anna and Elsa, her powers have frozen her heart, right?
She gets struck in the heart, and they have to go take care of that.
Anna, of course, doesn't realize what has happened, but her hair starts turning white. And Kristoff sees this after having left the palace and says, "All right, we need the first aid kit known as CrossFit Pabby."
Oh, yes.
As it turns out, he doesn't know that Anna was saved by the hidden folk.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. You know, when she was a little girl. But these are the same people who are his adopted family.
Yeah.
They raised him. So he brings her, this woman, back to the family. And they're overjoyed because Kristoff has found a gal.
Oh, yeah. What's this lady coming back here for?
Yeah. And they're so excited. Oh, you guys are together. And I was like, no. I'm marrying Prince Hans. We're not together.
No.
And the family is like, "Oh, no. I know you're probably not thinking Kristoff is great." And
he's
not. Just the worst. All of the backhanded compliments in the song.
Fixer Upper.
But I do find Fixer Upper to be a little problematic because we are simultaneously saying that love changes the world, which it does.
Yeah.
All true change stems from love, not fear.
Yes.
I completely believe that. But we're also kind of telling specifically little girls.
Yeah.
If you see some red flags, You can change those. All you
fine.
Need, all he needs is you to love him.
Yes.
And I'm like,
No,
that's not how life works. But who knows? Maybe that's just me projecting. Maybe people don't
actually
feel that
way. The best of intentions, they just want Kristoff to be happy.
They
do. And they're just like, "Hey, he's not like all the people, but like, don't forget that part."
We know that he's a little smelly, but he's got a wonderful heart. So
he's a good guy.
So look deeper.
Yes.
And that is great. Then what goes down plot-wise?
Elsa is taken back to Arendelle.
Oh, so yeah, Hans shows up with his search party,
mm-hmm.
and they put her in chains and take her back to Arendelle.
She willingly goes back because she's like, "Okay, I need to face this. I want to deal with this issue and see what's..."
Cue my other favorite new song in the piece.
Monster.
It's great. It's exactly what you want from,
it's
from
that. Yeah, I like that. It really took you through her thought patterns at that moment.
Yeah, and it means that Let It Go isn't really the high point of her... You know, it's the... no good deed goes unpunished of the Elsa role.
Snow good deed, they call it.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, I thought you just made that up.
That would have been great.
Does Anna get captured as well?
Oh, she goes back. She's back in Arendelle. How does she get back in Arendelle? They just go back to Arendelle.
They just go back, right?
Yeah, they just
because
go
they're
back.
Like, "Well, that didn't work out. Elsa didn't want to come back.
You need True Love's kiss, so Anna needs to get to Hans.
Holy cow, we totally skipped that. So they're told that in order for her to fully be healed.
Yes, CrossFit says, okay, you need True Love's kiss, and that will break the spell. Not True Love's kiss. That's not what I mean. An act of true love will thaw a frozen heart.
So then she's like, oh, well, my true love is Prince Hans. We need to go back to Arendelle.
So Kristoff wants her to be well, so takes her to Hans, to the doorstep, and says, please, like, just keep her safe.
What a sweet guy.
What a sweet guy.
Yeah.
And then Elsa's kind of like, they take her to, like, prison, basically. Mm-hmm. And Anna and Hans have their meeting, and she's like, hey, you know, Elsa froze my heart, but an act of true love, and let's get this going, and I'm so glad you're here. And he's like, actually, not what's happening here. Mm-hmm. I was hoping to somehow, like, usurp this entire situation and take control of Arendelle.
Yeah, remember how I could never have a kingdom because of all my brothers?
Actually, I can.
Now I can, because if I marry you and then both of you disappear, it's mine.
Ta-da. Actually, he's kind of smart.
I mean,
those other brothers?
Most villains are.
Yeah, those other brothers, I would be impressed with that. That's quite a strategy.
Very true.
Yeah, it's great.
Maybe not great, but
it's not great. So he leaves her to die.
Yes.
And
she's all by herself, and she sings this lovely song called True Love.
Yes, it is a lovely song.
And
cut for the tour, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's not going to be in New York anymore, but okay. Always on the recording.
Well, that's too bad.
It's a lovely song, because you really understand that her vulnerability got her to where she is and prevented her from kind of finding good things along the way,
and
because she was always so open and so willing to trust and love anyone.
And somehow not extinguishing her flame either.
Yes.
You know, she's still Anna.
Yeah.
And it's a great moment for her character.
Yeah, I think it's lovely. And then the first moment that we're even talking about Olaf is right now, because it's the first time he does something that's important. He comes and saves Anna.
Oh my gosh, we totally skipped in summer.
Let's not talk about my character. Well, it's true that he's not important, I guess, until
he's like
now.
Comic relief. And what does he do now?
And his whole, well, actually, the animators, we were talking to them when we were doing creating the show.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah. And they were saying how John Lasseter, name dropping.
Hey.
John Lasseter talked to me about how Olaf is a little piece of Anna and Elsa together. And so he represents their unity and their bond together.
Well, that's really great, because there's a song at the beginning called A Piece of You, A Piece of Me.
Yes, that's where that came from. He was very excited to talk about that.
How sweet.
Yeah, it is sweet. And he represents that in his kind of the heart. Well, they created him when they were younger. So it's kind of like that moment in time is frozen within him. He represents that. But in this scene, he comes in and saves Anna, and she's like, oh gosh, I don't even know what true love is. And Olaf, being kind of this open, youthful energy, is absorbing everything around him, tells her, you know, what true love is. True love is putting somebody else's needs before your own. Mm. And then helps her to realize, oh my gosh, I love Kristoff. So they're like, let's go get Kristoff.
Wow.
So boom, beeline to Kristoff. Hans is trying to go kill Elsa. They're all meeting up on the fjord, the frozen fjord.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the climax happens. Hans goes to kill Elsa, and Anna steps in to prevent this from happening. An act of true love. She is frozen, and Elsa is in pieces. She thinks she killed her sister.
She's responsible for the death.
Yes. And then because she just risked her life for her. Mm-hmm. That act of true love, not the kiss with Hans or Kristoff, unthaws her and has the spell is broken.
Oh, that's really sweet.
It is really sweet, isn't it?
Now I want to go see it.
Go sign up for the lottery.
Yeah.
Don't.
It's really sweet. And I forgot how much I love Olaf.
He's good.
Like, what a sweet character.
Yeah.
You know?
He's great.
Mm.
We love Olaf.
We all need a little bit of Olaf.
We do.
Lives. Yeah. And I think that it's a beautiful ending to the show.
It is, because it's about the girls.
It's
about their relationship.
And we've been dealing with them by themselves.
Yeah.
For so long.
Yeah.
That it is a great payoff to see the culmination be about them acting together.
It is sweet.
And not only does it unthaw Anna, but it unthaws Arendelle.
Yeah.
Right?
And the whole kingdom. And she takes her powers and knows how to use them better now.
Yeah.
She gets a harness on them.
Because I do think that sometimes our strengths in life can ultimately become our weaknesses, you know? And
vice versa.
And vice versa. What a great metaphor for that. Because I almost don't even see it as controlling so much as using with a better intention.
Yeah.
As soon as you know how you can use your powers,
yeah,
then all of a sudden that changes everything.
Exactly. No, it's sweet. I love that. I love that they take something that she has a lot of shame around and makes it her superpower,
mm-hmm,
which I think so many people can identify with that. We all have something that we're just like, oh, this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think having it be out in the open, talking about it, experiencing it with other people and having understanding around you really helps to take away the shame.
An incredible story to have for kids, because it immediately alleviates the possibility of bullying.
Yeah.
When you see that we all have quirks, but that they are actually our superpowers.
Yeah.
Honestly, that is the vehicle for diversity,
yeah,
and making our lives abundant and full.
Yeah.
Okay, I like Frozen.
Yeah, you like Frozen.
I do.
I think you should see the show.
I should. What does Frozen mean to you? Really fast before we leave.
What does Frozen mean to me?
Because it has been a huge portion of your life.
Oh my gosh. Well, personally, it's really changed a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Just being able to work with all these amazing people.
Yeah.
And to play the super famous character and work with Liesl Tommy and Christopher Windham and Jason Michael Webb, creating something from the ground up. It means a lot. The doing of the show, and it's lovely. I never tracked Olaf in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I had like 3 auditions that week and just went and, you know, what I didn't think about it a lot, and was pleased to get to play him, because it's just a lovely reminder of like the power of innocence and love and all of that.
That's great.
Yeah, it's good.
Thank you, Lopez's. Thank you, Jennifer Lee.
Oh my gosh.
For changing the landscape of this kinds of stories that we expect from Disney and the kinds of things we get to experience in theater.
Yeah.
My hope is that it is for the better. And I think that when you surround yourself with artists who have integrity, it will be.
Yeah. Love is an open door.
Love is an open door. Thanks everybody for listening. We're on Instagram now.
Oh my gosh.
So follow us on Instagram and Twitter at A Musical Podcast. If you have any ideas for shows you would like covered here on A Musical Theater Podcast, you can always email amusicalpodcast@gmail.com. I haven't done this for a while, so let's give some thanks to Michael J. Willett for creating our artwork and our theme song, and to all of the quirky people out there. Hygge.
Hygge. Hygge. Hygge. Hygge.
Hey, it's me, Jeff. Hi, I just got back from Frozen. After all that, I entered the lottery, I won tickets, I went to the Pantages, to the gorgeous Pantages Theater in Los Angeles, in Hollywood, and I saw Frozen. Go to our Instagram at A Musical Podcast to see the photos. I wanted to check in after the episode and say that even after I saw it, I feel like this is a really great episode about Frozen. I'm really happy with everything we talked about, except for this one thing. While watching it, I had this burning question, which is, after Anna and Elsa's parents die, who is running Arendelle until the moment that Elsa becomes queen? I mean, we fleshed out that story to 2 acts in over 2 hours, and we never touched on that. I'm just saying. The show is gorgeous. Everybody's super talented. And the audience was going crazy, so they had to be doing something right. Anyway, I saw Frozen. And I'm very proud of myself. Bye, everybody.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the Rise Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org, because only together we rise.